up for the Queen Bee, Debbie Goldsberry.
Well, hi everyone. Okay, this thing is a little tall. It's great to be here. I got it. It's okay. Thanks, Alex. So nervous. Every time I do this, I'm sweaty. It's okay. Very honored to be here. I'm happy to be working on the cannabis business conferences with Alex and with Anthony. I work mainly on the International Cannabis Business Conference down in San Francisco coming up in September. So hope you can come down. It's February, sorry, for Valentine's Day. Hopefully you can come for Valentine's Day to San Francisco. But today I'm honored to be here to put the showcase on some amazing women who we've brought to the panel who are gonna tell us about their great work, what they've been able to accomplish. We're gonna hear from Ashley Priest-Sackett, who's the founder of Cascadia Labs here in Oregon. Let's give it up for Ashley, hard worker. Woo! Next to her, we have Chelsea Hopkins, who took her knowledge of pharmaceuticals and all of her research and used it to found a collective dispensary called, what's your collective called?
The Greener Side.
The Greener Side in Eugene. So let's hear it for Chelsea, woo! Greener Side. And then at the end, Dale Sky Jones, who is just one of the hardest working people that I know. She runs Oaksterdam University and also is the chair of the coalition. Oh man, I'm so nervous. I'm forgetting our name of our group. CCPR, Coalition for Cannabis Policy Reform. And we're trying to legalize cannabis in California. It's a real uphill battle there, wrapping our heads around the language, the process, and how to get the money, because we need millions and millions and millions of dollars to win that battle in California. So give it up for Dale for all the hard work she's doing. Well, my name's Debbie Goldsberry, and I'm a medical cannabis person for 25 years, from, like my daughter likes to say, from way back in the 1900s, I've been working on this. And right now I'm the ambassador at Magnolia Wellness Dispensary Collective in Oakland, California. Thank you, shout out for Magnolia. And among other things, I'm working with Dale, and I work with the judge on CBDS. I'm one of the board members at Cannabis Sativa Inc. Cannabis Sativa Inc. Losing my mind. Thankfully, I wrote my notes down, so I shall be able to give my presentation, and then we'll turn it over to these lovely ladies. I'm gonna give a presentation called Saving America with Cannabis. Saving America with Cannabis. Yeah. Jack Herrera, author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, inspired the cannabis movement way back in the 1970s, which after all these years and through much hard work, we actually managed to create a new billion-dollar industry for America. Those of you that know Jack, that's what he was always telling us. We're going to make a billion-dollar industry. We did it. Let's hear it for... Hemp can save the planet was his battle cry, and he promoted the use of hemp for food, fuel, fiber, and medicine. But Jack also believed that America needed to shift its consciousness and to think differently, and that the use of cannabis was a shortcut to cultural acceptance and enlightenment. As my friend Barry Plunker Adams, co-founder of the Rainbow Family, says, he's an expert on the constitutional right to gather, by the way, cannabis users share a common creed. Basically, it's simple. We tolerate each other and we like to share cannabis. Once we share our cannabis, we start to share other things. We share meals, we share coffee, we like each other, we share. Both Plunker and Herrera traveled with the hemp tours, which hit the road at the height of the war on drugs. We hosted over 1,500 advocacy events between 1989 and 1996. And during this time, constitutional protections were at an all-time low. Do you guys remember that when the police could just stop us because we looked like we smoked cannabis and they could search us and they were taking us to jail and arresting us all the time? What a nightmare. At the time, police could stop and search us for having a Grateful Dead sticker on our car, for looking like we used cannabis. And during this time, our nation's prisons became bloated with people there for nothing more than simple possession of drugs. Many of the leaders of the industry met, or we got our start with Jack Herrera back in that time. People like Steve D'Angelo and Ed Rosenthal, you know, whose members in the Youth International Party, the Yippies of the 60s and 70s, inspired the cannabis movement to stay fun, fresh, and radical. If you look, you'll find people who got their start at the hemp tour events all through the cannabis industry and in the major advocacy groups. In short, all of these people got started to promote a mission, basically to make America a better place by ending cannabis prohibition. Unfortunately, all of the original cannabis dispensaries have closed, including Dennis Perrone's original dispensary in San Francisco, and their former leadership is largely silenced. They're worn down by police action after police action after police action. And sadly, Jack Herrera passed away in 2010. Now, the cannabis industry is expanding at lightning speed, and many of the new entrepreneurs missed cannabis prohibition altogether. Not that that's bad, but just because in many ways, being harassed by the police, arrested for cannabis, and spending time in jail, like many of us who are the leaders of the industry or the pioneers had to do, created a powerful force for change. In other words, rather than being crushed by prohibition, we became stronger. Enter the nouveau cannabis entrepreneurs. They see what happened before as laced with stigma, and they want no part of it. Going to jail for cannabis or battling the war on drugs in the streets for our freedoms is not in their wheelhouse. Instead, their battle cry is, "We are here to clean all that up." Somehow, without realizing, not only are they talking about the existing cannabis industry, but also about their clients. It would be more worrisome, but cannabis users can spot a fake, because our creed is real. To people with friends in prison who are still harassed on the streets and who know people denied cannabis medicines by prohibition, it's important to us that we build an industry that stays mission and value-based, like we've always been. Done right, cannabis legalization will have a long-lasting effect on America. Cannabis, when consumed, it gives people the chance to interrupt the normal way they think. We actually start thinking differently, relating facts and ideas together in ways that we hadn't imagined before. This is, in fact, the crux of creativity. But sometimes it takes us a little longer because we like to ponder these things. We're literally hashing things out in our mind. So, in fact, using cannabis for business might give us a competitive edge, because in entrepreneurial industries, we need to be creative. And we might actually have the key to this innovation. Last year, when we came to Portland for this conference, Andrew Sullivan spoke about how the cannabis industry and the fact that we are mission and vision first is changing America as a whole. And this must stay our goal while we also build great businesses. As Alex Rogers, founder of this organization and this conference, ICBC founder, says, "Let's make money and be successful, but no one has to lose." So as the cannabis industry builds, it needs to stay focused on keeping the 44% of Americans who have used cannabis out of harm's way from prohibition. People should unite around developing sound businesses, but also around culture, politics, and advocacy. But most important, be kind. Thank you. Well, thank you. I'm going to invite Ashley to come up next. Ashley Priest-Sackett. She's co-founder of Cascadia Labs. She manages their business development activities and horticultural science services. She's also an inspector for Clean Green Certification Group and has just been added as the vice chair for Women Grow. Let's hear it for Ashley.
So short. Thank you, Debbie.
All right.
First off, I want to thank OMMBC for putting this event on. I think it's pretty amazing what they put together, and all of you for attending as well, because without us all collaborating here for these types of events, Oregon wouldn't be the leading state in the nation, which I believe we are, so thank you. So I wear many hats in the industry, as Debbie noted, as well as in Cascadia Labs. Not only do I do the horticulture science, but I also do business development management and community outreach. My first experience with cannabis was at a very young age, like many people in the industry. And I didn't really fully understand why there was this demonized concept around cannabis. Even at a young age, I couldn't figure it out because it was such a great tool for me with my own experiences. So as I grew older and studied the plant more, it ended up creating this wonderful relationship with the plant and with other people that have relationships with the plant to talk about some of the issues in the industry at a very young age. These experiences opened the doors for my future relationship with the plant as of today, which is bigger and better than I had ever anticipated. I would have never thought that I would be here now talking about cannabis to a group of people when at the age of 15 I was getting in lots of trouble for using the plant. So after I graduated from Boise State University with a horticulture degree in 2004, I began playing with the fundamentals of cultivating cannabis, both indoor and outdoor, various organic and sustainable techniques. And then after collaborating for many years with my partner, Jeremy Sackett, who has an extensive background in FDA-approved pharmacology, we opened the doors to Cascadia Labs, which is a cannabis-centric QC testing and research facility. We consider Cascadia Labs to be the contaminant control and active ingredient characterization QC testing laboratory, in parallel providing project-based contract research and development. Our specialization is in complex plant matrices, particularly cannabis. We launched in early 2013 and quickly outgrew our 1,200 square foot facility in Bend, and now we're currently building out a 10,500 square foot facility in Portland. Both Bend and Portland remain in operation, and we do courier service throughout Portland and into Southern Oregon as well. So kind of the background as a side part of the lab, we've also stayed very active with rulemaking processes, with the OHA developing rules for dispensary programs that are implemented right now. And we're working with the OLCC for adult choice market. We're turning our attention more to the federal level. We're going bigger and stronger. I'll be traveling in October to DC to help lobby for federal banking and taxation changes. So always going above and beyond. When I set my mind on something, I keep my eye on the ball and just go for it. So this is the next step, I think, for our industry, is to make a change on that level. Using my horticulture degree, I've also, as Debbie said, I'm a Clean Green certifier, so I inspect farms and even processors that make concentrates, and we certify people clean green, so it's equivalent of the organic, which is not FDA approved for cannabis, obviously. So this amazing gentleman named Chris Van Hook started the company in California, and he has implemented the same systems as organic, as close as I could find. There's a couple different certifications you can get, but in my opinion, the clean green has definitely gone above and beyond. So their motto, which I totally respect, is that the program is a qualified third-party, non-conflict agricultural program that supports sustainable practices and environmental stewardships. I forgot I had this. I got so nervous. So that's a wonderful thing that I've established too, because I always like to keep my hands in the dirt, literally. And I feel like I got tied into the lab very intensely for a good 2 years, and I wasn't able to focus on the plant. And being a black market grower from the past, which back then I had no option. I loved the plant and I grew, and that's what I did. And now I don't have to be a black market grower. I can still have my hands in the dirt and own a professional business and be a professional woman. So that's fantastic. Thank you. Most recently, I became vice chair of the Portland chapter Women Grow, and it has been an amazing whirlwind. I had no idea that there were so many amazing women out there just looking to unite with other amazing women. I've been to a lot of these events in the past 3 years, and you know, the after parties, we'd all get together and have fun, but for Women Grow, it's actually brought these women together on a professional level so we can collaborate and empower each other to move forward with our hopes and dreams and change the rest of the nation's concept about this plant. So to me, it's been a very inviting group. not only just to connect, but also to educate as well, which I think is very important. And the more we educate the rest of Oregon and the rest of the nation and the rest of the world, the more this plant will be able to help people and help lives. So it's pretty amazing. The last slide I have, I kind of debated whether even to go into some of the challenges that women have, because I don't really see them as challenges. I see them more as it's just a different, for example, the work-life balance for a woman is a bit different from a man. Still to this day, it's kind of expected that a woman stays home with the child or picks the child up from school. And that's one of the things that I've dealt with my career is time. But it's not really a challenge. It's more of just balancing, balancing your daily life and balancing my career with being a mom. And then the lack of female roles in not only in the cannabis industry, but I think in general, there, you know, it is on a national level, it is a man-based higher up. So I think that there's something to be said on that. And then the glass ceiling, obviously, it's this unofficial acknowledged barrier. 77 cents, a woman makes 77 cents per dollar with the same job in the nation. If you have the same title, 77 cents per dollar, which is interesting. But like I said, I debated whether even to bring these points up, but being a woman, and I see it in the industry, and I see it in other industries, I think it's just something that we're working on and working towards. So with that being said, thank you all for listening, and I'm going to give it back to Debbie. All
right. Well, it's not the 1900s anymore. Like my daughter, I love it when she says that, by the way. It's so funny. Way back, but I remember when I did first get involved in it, and it was at the tail end of, you remember the old slogan, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We don't do that anymore, right? I mean, I'm sure we do, but sex doesn't is number one on the list anymore. I don't know. Wait, okay, I am speaking for myself. I'm single. Sorry. But I remember when I was very young, and one thing that was very discouraging to me was I was at a big conference for one of the national organizations. It was normal. It was so embarrassing. And it was at the big event, and the director got up at the time. Nobody you probably know. He was just one of these guys who was director for a minute. And he gave a speech where he said he wanted to be in a hot tub with me. And I found that to be very uncomfortable. And they put that on the CD that they sold over the internet for the conference. And I asked them, do you think you could remove that part where he talks about me and him in a hot tub? And they refused. And I didn't respect them anymore. I get to choose where I go, and I chose not to be there. But it's different days, I'll tell you. And we've, as a society, moved away greatly by identifying that sexual harassment works. I mean, it happens in the workplace. That by identifying in social movements that we're equals, by identifying that there's real problems in the war on drugs when it comes to racial inequity. You know, I'm a parent. I'm a solo parent. And when I do things, I always have to balance. I try and tell people my free time cost me $16 an hour because that's what I pay my nanny. So when I say I can't come to every social event or I can't be at every conference, don't hold it against me. I have to pay a nanny, so I pick and choose where I go. But I'll tell you, I can see it in people's eyes that they're thinking that there's something weak about me because I'm raising a child and I'm not able to do what I want, or because I choose to stay home with my family sometimes rather than come out and socialize. So I think that what we have to do as a group of people is make room for women. We need children, you know?
Well, we're supplying.
And, And we need each other, and we are a community. So let's make sure to make place for everyone in this community. And in fact, I wish we would stop identifying as man and woman, or I'm this type of person or that type of person. We're one person. And the more we can break down barriers between us and just be one, I think the better off we are. So I'm super enjoying being here with you all and being together and being one together. And with that, I'd like to bring up Chelsea, our next speaker. Chelsea's super cool. Chelsea got involved in this because she was studying pharmaceutical pushing. She didn't like what she was seeing. She was studying the health and environmental aspects of mass food production, and she didn't like that either. So she realized that cannabis can help solve some of those problems and started looking at cannabis, and she applied that knowledge to start her own collective dispensary. So I'll let Chelsea tell you what she's doing, but let's hear it for her.
Well, it is an honor to be up here with these women. Some of them were my teachers, and they didn't know it, but my mentors at the time. And so I'm just so honored to be up here on this panel with women. And the amount of women in the audience, I think, pays tribute to where we're at in the industry right now. We are pushing boundaries. We are breaking barriers. And it is an amazing time for women to get involved in the industry right now. When I got involved in the industry, I remember sitting down with the five people who I was going to start my business with, and we went around the table and talked about our fears and what we wanted to accomplish. And when we got to one of the other women in the group, she said, "My fear is that you're going to lose your children, Chelsea, and I don't want to see that happen." And it was something that I had thought about, but I didn't realize somebody else was thinking about it as well. So I laid low, and kind of how Ashley was saying, you know, I think a lot of women were in the underground, both on the black market and even in the professional industry. We weren't putting ourselves out there, at least I wasn't. So for about a year, I laid low. I was still involved in my business, but I had an office that was outside of it. And I went about a year into that. It was 2013, and in Southern Oregon, there were federal raids going on at cannabis farms who were on the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And at that point, I said, you know what, I need to be loud and proud about what I'm doing. I need to be out there supporting these farmers and talk to the media, because I am a powerful woman, I'm a mother, and people will listen to me. So I went out. So I went out and I met a woman out there who shamed me for being public about what I was doing and said, "You're putting your kids in jeopardy." And I was shocked. I went home and asked my husband, "Do you get the same reaction from people?" And he said, "No, you know, people don't shame me for having kids and being involved in this." So I made it a point to be proactive, to be out there. I'm not going to let people shame me for what I'm doing. And I had an opportunity to move to Eugene, where I still am the executive director at the dispensary, the Greener Side. And I am the image that people see before they come into the Greener Side. I am the one that talks to the media. And so I was the target of the raid that happened in 2014. And I went to jail, and I was plastered all over the newspaper. I was plastered in the news, and while I was in jail, I was kind of wondering, you know, what's happening to my kids? Are they being taken care of? What does this community think? And I was shocked at how much support I got. The community was outraged that a woman was taken to jail for helping people, and that they were using money to come after me, that this nice lady who is benefiting the community was a target of a police raid. So I want women out there to know that people support us. The country loves women. They love powerful women. Our communities love us. We are raising our children. we're raising the future, and there's support for you out there. Don't be afraid to be in the media. Stand your ground and be you, and don't let people tell you not to do something. Don't let people shame you and think that what you're doing is wrong, because women right now are pushing the boundaries, and we're going to take... People are watching Oregon right now, and we have women grow. We have women organizations popping up nationwide in support. There was Moms from Measure 91 that really helped push legalization in Oregon. And right now, one of the things I'm working on is women leaders in the cannabis industry that is in Eugene, Oregon. We're working to build a philanthropy-based organization where women choose causes that we feel are important, and we raise money for them, and we show the communities that we are a powerful force, and we can raise money, and we can make the community better if we work together. This is a billion-dollar industry, and we need to make sure that we are putting money back into charity and that we are helping our communities, just benefit our communities where we feel they need to be benefited. I have the pleasure of working with women and moms all over this state and in several other states, and I think we're doing a fantastic job of starting to educate our children as well, which is huge. They are going to be our successors, and they're going to take this cannabis industry to the next level, and if we educate them now, they're going to go to their school, and when they have DARE programs, they're going to raise their hand and say, actually, my parents told me about cannabis, and they're going to educate them and educate their friends, and it's really exciting right now to be a part of that, and it's so encouraging to see all of the women out here and be on a panel with these amazing women, and thank you so much for being here. I can't wait to see where we take this.
I remember one time when I was meeting some of my kid was in kindergarten, and you know, the parents are nosy. We're all trying to find out what everyone else does, you know. So somebody asked my daughter, what does your mom do? And my daughter just said, just a little marijuana. And then, you know, oh my God, the parents came up to me, Debbie. I was like, medical first, and then you say the marijuana, but... But I remember when I was one of the only people, the only women running medical cannabis dispensaries, and I remember back then dispensaries were being raided every Wednesday at 6 a.m. So every Wednesday I was terrified. I was like, is this the day that I'm going to be the one that gets raided and my daughter's going to be taken? And in order for me to do my work, I had to not only did I have to realize that when the government is doing something so foul, like what they're doing with prohibition, even though the sacrifice I had to make inside my head was that the guardianship of my child could be taken away from me for doing my political activism, when it's that bad, that's when you have to act. You have to act.
You are not allowed to make me cry right before I go on stage.
Right? So to do my work, I had to have a very complicated series of guardianship papers in place so that my family could come in and take my child out of a foster care situation. Oh, how horrible. And even now, our friends in states that aren't as friendly as we are here are having their children taken away. Somebody, one of our friends in had to leave Pennsylvania as a refugee after her son mentioned that hemp was a beneficial plant for food, fuel, and fiber, and it ignited a CPS search of her, CPS came to her house to talk to her about her children understanding about cannabis. What a nightmare. Let's not stop the work, and you know what? Let's help families, and let's help women, and let's help men, and let's help dads, and let's help all people be together to fight back this prohibition. There's people that need a little bit of extra help. We know that they're locking up minority marijuana users left and right, we have to do extra work to protect people. We know that mothers in particular, we're terrified our children are gonna be taken away. We have to do extra work to protect parents. Fathers, the same thing, the terrifying factor. Let's do extra work around these issues. But I guess that's a good introduction for Dale, who does more extra work than just about anyone I know. Of course, she's a parent of two children. I'll be traveling back on the airplane with her son. He's just 1 month under that two-year carry on the lap. You know, I have the middle seat. Anyway, I want to introduce Dale Sky Jones, who's actually just came out of nowhere. Where'd you even come from the movement? But to take a top leadership position, because Dale is determined. Dale gets this issue. Dale is driven. She comes from a family of strong women. If you've ever met her mother, you know where Dale gets it. From birth, Dale was born to be a leader. Her mom's a DJ on the radio. Dale can talk. Dale can convince people. Dale is affable. People like her. And Dale is a leader. She runs the Coalition for Cannabis Policy Reform. I got it right. And she's going to help us legalize cannabis in California. She runs Oaksterdam University, where I'm a professor. And she will tell you more about her own good work. But let's hear it for Dale.
Oh, thank you, Debbie. Good afternoon, Oregon. All right, I think you can do better. Good afternoon, Oregon. We just had to make sure everybody downstairs knew we were here. All right. You know, it's funny when you're talking about embarrassing things that your children say. My son recently, the older one, who's 4 and a half, pointed at a cannabis leaf walking by and said, "Look, Mom, an Oaksterdam leaf." I said, "Yes, right answer." All right, so less embarrassing, more pride. Anyway, you know, it was actually my first experience with Women Grow, where they made me talk about myself, which is the last thing that I like to talk about. I'm really talented at changing the subject and talking about policy instead. Turns out people don't always like that. They want to know who you are and where you come from to know if they should take you seriously. Most folks thought I was the Fed for the first 2 years. I actually had to marry one of the grandfathers of the industry and bear his two children to prove that I am not the Fed. Do you believe me now? Have I done it? Is it, yeah? Okay. It was corporate Fed, it's similar, it wasn't my fault. And the other thing that my mom was, other than a radio and television personality, before that, she was a neonatal intensive care unit nurse. And so she also taught me, and the head nurse at that, after straight A's in college, which I did not do, that you can also change your job and change your life and change the hat that you wear, and the entire focus. You can take a left turn or a right turn and go in an entirely different direction with your life. And I think that was actually the biggest gift that she gave me, was the confidence to change my mind from that corporate path that I was on to say, this is empty. I'm enriching someone else's bottom line. I was the only chick in the room, in every room. And it's interesting, we go back and forth. I know Debbie and I have, and I'm sure you've thought about it as well, these women's panels, they go both ways. On a certain point, are we taking some of the leaders that should have been on the panel about regulation or legalization and sticking them on a panel with boobs? Because really, the only difference between us and them is that, right? However, it's also important to have this conversation. Because to your point with looking at where we are on how people get paid, what gets measured gets done. If we're not talking about this issue, not only does nothing change, but this industry starts looking like every other industry. And so let me share with you what I realized was what we've been doing here is just simply cutting a path. We just have the machete, that's all. And we're cutting a path through the jungle. The thing is this industry has not yet been built. So all this talk that we have about glass ceilings, the ceiling isn't built yet. And the way I see it, women are in charge of construction. What if we just never have one? We have an opportunity as women building this new industry to ensure that this industry is what we want it to be. We don't have to go fight for our rights or take it back. It doesn't even have to be a fight.
We're all building this together. And what I've noticed in the last 2 years as women start to come out is that the men, they're not trying to hold us down, they're lifting us up. They're saying, thank God, someone with reason that's not just gonna throw testosterone, get in a fight, and decide we can never work together again. That's why more women in Congress are also benefiting. It's true. If you look at the studies of who reaches across the aisle, who is it?
Women!
And that's why we're glad we're here, because that's really all this is. The men have done a fine job trying to drive the issue forward. The unfortunate truth is, it's largely been white male comedians. Not a whole lot for moms to identify with. In fact, that's exactly what I don't want you to grow up like, okay? So kind of the antithesis effect of like, yeah, the only people willing to come out and talk about it were the very people you did not want your children to turn out like, okay? And so part of what needed to happen was for women, to see mothers, to identify with, say, I have nothing in common with that white male comedian, but I have something in common with that woman over there. And if she's talking about legalizing pot, is it really about legalizing pot? No, that's about 12th on the list. It's about ending the civil rights, the most important civil rights violations of our time. It's about allowing medicine, yes, for mothers trying to save their babies, but for fathers trying to save their babies too. And so, as we still have babies ripped from the breast of their mother while they're nursing, and people forget this, oh, pot's legalized. No, it's not, especially if you're black in Compton. It's not legal unless you're white in Berkeley or in Oregon. Good job, guys. Okay. It's part of what these folks are doing, the true believers against prohibition, to subvert what we are trying to accomplish here. We talk about side projects. My side project right now, because I didn't have nothing to do, was CPS. Because it turns out that our post-training that's happening with law enforcement officers and CPS agents in California is specifically teaching them how to subvert the medical marijuana laws and take those kids anyway. We are seizing children. Talk about Fourth Amendment violations. This is the worst kind of seizure. It is the worst human rights violation you can visit upon a baby, to take his mother's milk. And this is why we have to talk. And this is why we need women's panels, because it is getting offended, irate about what happens to you as a mom that finally gets people to act, even if they're not that mom. Because up until then, it's just your problem as the mom. I accidentally became a spokeswoman. It, I assure you, was not on purpose. I didn't want anything to do with the damn camera, and I fought it for a few years. I also got attacked, and it was very publicly. And it was after, you know, a few years of almost starting to feel like, wow, I accidentally became a spokeswoman for motherhood just because I didn't know what else to do. I had just had a baby. I had stuff to do. I had meetings to attend. We had coalitions to build, so I just strapped them on and went and did it. Some of you might have even been the audience. When Jackson was like 2 months old, I thought, oh, he's sleeping. I'll just wear him onto the stage. Woo! Until he woke up. I just did a little spin. And suddenly he was quiet. And was like, wow, how'd she shut him up? They come in handy sometimes. But it wasn't until I brought him at 2 to a press conference. It was a press conference in a hotel just like this one. Not a smokeout. A press conference. I believe, personally, the most dangerous thing in that room was, in fact, the reporters. And instead of writing about the fact that we had the former president of Mexico saying we need to legalize, despite the fact that you had a mother on the panel talking about how this affected the children, the Miss Deborah Saunders of SF Chronicle decided to make it all about me having a child at a marijuana event. Now, I was pregnant with my second child and probably a wee bit emotional. Jeff tells me so. I freaked out. I felt like this woman had just put a target on my head. This was after the Oaksterdam raid. I already had PTSD. Every time I turned off my alarm in the morning, I just took a deep breath that it was me turning off my alarm in the morning. and not jackboots and guns to our head because of our political activity. And I went quiet for almost a year and just stopped showing up. I had a great excuse. I had a baby. I'm busy. I was afraid. I still am. That never goes away. I think until they're 18 and then you're just afraid of a different set of issues. And so I just want to remind all of you, as I went entirely off track of what I thought I was going to say while I was on stage, how unbelievably important this issue is, because it's not legal yet. And these are the very things that are keeping women out of the conversation. It's really important to realize that fear is huge. But it's not just fear of me, it's fear of the soccer mom. You see, when you have a baby, there's this little crazy switch in the back of your neck right here, where suddenly everything you thought was okay is not okay anymore, because now you're imagining your child doing it. And now it's definitely not okay. And in fact, I'm probably gonna be against things that I used to be for just because I had that baby and that little flip switched. And so we have to address these fears with moms. Own them, talk about them as moms to moms, that legalization is actually about our children. Even if your kid is not a black kid in Compton, your kid grows up with that kid. And if he has no respect for himself or his life, he'll have no respect for yours either. And until we start respecting these lives, especially in the urban communities, that's going to continue to happen. And it's not just women that we have to ensure opportunity for, it's minorities. We're all in the same boat here. We've all had similar issues. And it's making sure that we as mothers are not treating other mothers poorly for this either. I knew Deborah Saunders could not possibly have children when she accused my children of being accessories. And clearly you've not traveled with a child. This is not a bracelet you put on to look cute, okay? This is work. It's really difficult. But in all of the influence research that I've done since 2010, I've discovered that there's only two things you actually need to change the world. Simple. Two things. People have to believe that it is worth it, and they must believe that they can do it. A lot of what we started in California showed people it was worth it. And then Colorado, Washington, Oregon, the other Washington, Guam. Can I get some love for Guam? Nobody ever gives love to They're proving that it's worth it as DUI goes down, as overdose deaths go down, as young men's suicides go down. These are your daughters. These are your sons. And that's why I'm not just talking to the women here. And that's why men do care. Because they have daughters and mothers too. Yeah? What? Yeah, that's what you were supposed to do the first time, guys. All right. Wrap it. So I just want to wrap this up with just simply one thought. The Good Old Girls Network is now in town. And we can write laws where we can all participate, and this is not just to get jobs for equal pay, but this is to be the leaders in the jobs, to be able to get the licenses without having to have hundreds of thousands of dollars in capital behind you, which usually goes to who? White men. Okay, this is a systemic issue. So as we go to questions, I just want to remind you about that simple theory that we are all greater than the sum of our parts. We have the entourage effect working for us, and I look forward to working with all of you on these next steps. Thank you so much for your time and attention.
Do you want to? I think we're just going to throw it over to Ngayo for the questions.
Check, check. Aha! Step one, plug it in. Step two, turn it on. All right, are there questions? All right, we have a question over here. Here we go.
Hi. My name's Simone. I'll just stand. And thank you for not only bringing up women, but minority issues too, because Yes, women only make 77 cents in the dollar, but women of color, black women, only make 70, and Hispanic women only make 64. And so I just want to say thank you for making this a multidimensional issue and not just getting so honed down on what women can do. And with that said, what else can be done, being as you guys are leaders, what else can be done for the outreach for those most vulnerable women, not just the powerhouses, but to empower those who really need it?
Yeah. We need to reach across to mainstream groups like the NAACP, Latino Voters Leagues. These folks already have their constituencies in place. They already have leadership. They already have people that can carry the message. And most importantly, they have trust. And so if you can find the thought leaders, the influencers in these other groups, like in California, we brought on Miss Alice Huffman, the executive director of the NAACP, and her going to faith leaders, black preachers. I could never get a meeting with these. I don't even know who to call. But they do. And I think that's that back to the reaching across the aisle. It doesn't just have to be between us. It also needs to be outside of us.
Thank you, ladies. Do you have a chapter of Women Grow in Southern Oregon? And if you don't, I'd like to help or talk to you about that.
I actually just met a woman today at this event. And that's one of the reasons these events are so awesome, because it makes connections like this one. And she, I'm not sure where she's based out of. She's right here.
You all should meet right here, right after the panel.
She's amazing, and I'm actually going to be meeting with her at some point to talk about how to move forward with that, so we'll make it happen. Yeah.
Does anybody else have a question about any?
I got one over here.
Whoa, here I come.
Hi, my name is Claire Keene. I have a question for Ashley. My concern actually comes from the financial services side of the industry, which I see as the next wave of making people criminals for actually creating good, positive businesses. I was curious about your trip to Washington, if you could tell us a little bit about that and what that looks like and how you see that as the next steps.
Absolutely. I'm actually attending with a larger group of people, the Oregon Cannabis Association, and so there are, I think there are 20 people at this point, and we have scheduled to meet. Last year when this group went, we met with representatives who were pro-cannabis, and we focused on that, but this time around we're actually doing the opposite. We're going to be meeting with representatives that are not pro-cannabis, so we'll be focusing on those people and focusing on banking and the tax issues at hand. So I personally am not involved in our day-to-day, you know, who we're meeting and when and where and the conversations, but it's been, last year was very effective, and I think this year we have even a more established group of people going. So for me, it's kind of a new experience, and I don't know that much about it, so I can't answer too many questions yet. We're still planning everything, but I'd love to keep you posted, and everybody else posted too, because it's a pretty amazing thing at the end of the day when we come back and the people that we've talked to, it does make an impact.
Hi, ladies. My name is Laura. I'm with a company called the Stash Brothers in Eugene. We are a company of growers. I love the work that Oaksterdam does, and I'm wondering if there's any plans to bring that sort of a model up here in Oregon. I think a way to get more women into the industry is through education, which I'm sure you'll agree. And so I'm just wondering what the plan is, if you have any ideas, if women growers have any ideas. I think, you know, women being natural teachers and leaders can really bring this forward in Oregon.
Would you be able to help me find instructors up here? I thought so. I was hoping you were volunteering. Thank you for asking. No, I am intrigued, and I didn't actually come to this particular panel with any plans or designs, but after talking with a lot of you folks just over the last couple days, it's definitely got me thinking. Our neighbors to the north, a lot of folks actually from California have moved to Oregon and escaped because we're going to hell in a handbasket down there. Good call, guys.
you're smarter than I am. So I do see that opportunity, and I agree with you that education is really important. I just want to make sure that I do it with the locals so that whatever education we bring to Oregon is actually by Oregon for Oregon. It just carries the Oakster Dam. You know, we use our frame and then fill it with the spirit and the letter of your law with your instructors. That's what I would be interested in. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah? All right. I'll talk to my director of operations then. He'll get mad at me for saying yes. Thank you.
All right. Do we have another question or
right
two? I had a. Oh, there you go. Oh, I had a question too. What would you? So if women or people of color or men who want to be women or whatever, just people.
We have men speak all the time, actually.
Yeah, and of course.
And men attend. It's not women's only. I think it's 30% men. So you should
come
next time.
It's the only cannabis conference that is predominantly women. Yeah.
So you're saying you have a chance.
I had a gentleman ask me, don't you think it's discriminative to call it, to have women grow in general? And, you know, what would you think of a man grow? And I said, that's what the industry has been for
Right.
in the past.
Why can't we have White History Month? I was saving this joke till tomorrow, but I'll tell it now. I'm starting a minority cannabis extraction company called Black Lives Shatter. All right. who had the next question?
Hi, ladies. So honored to be here and hear you guys talking. I have a question more on the lines of criminal justice. People that are still in legal states, people that are still stuck in that CPS hell, people that are in community supervision, still in prison. Who's working on that? Is there a direction anybody is going with that?
Yeah, no, we are. So right now,
especially women, you know, families broken apart.
It's. I'll be honest with you, it's an extraordinarily difficult subject to work on, especially for me, because I have to schedule an extra 15 minutes after the call to get my shit together after the call, because I often start crying on the call. It's really hard to deal with. Fortunately, we have some amazing individuals. Many of you know Diane Goldstein. She's of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. She's helping me spearhead in California, and this is something that's going to need to happen individually in each of the states, because there's training that happens, ongoing training for law enforcement officers, as well as cadet training, plus the training that happens with the social workers and the CPS agents and their advisors, plus the training that happens with public defenders, or lack of training for public defenders in these situations if you can't afford to hire a lawyer. So we are doing a three-prong approach in California that we've been quietly working on just for about 3 months now with Assemblyman Bill Quirk, who is the head of the safety committee in California. I've managed to convince him that this is very much a safety issue for his safety committee, partially because of where our priorities are going, of which kids they're taking, and how we're spending resources on that when we shouldn't be. And you know, more importantly, I think, to the state, that they have, they're going to start coming up against some serious issues with lawsuits, with, you know, as they continue to do the same old thing, but the laws have changed around them. So the approach is to instigate training that is, we're going to do it through Oaksterdam, that's just open source, free. Any parent that wants to come learn what their rights are and how to apply it, because parents, you don't even realize, they have to have, just like anything else, they actually have to have a warrant to take your child. They don't get to just take your child. You get to say, no, you don't get my kid, and call your lawyer right away. It's not just automatic that they can take your kid. And so a lot of people don't understand this. So training for parents, training for the professionals who defend the parents. But the most important part here is we're working on an audit. Now, you guys can do this audit right now because you've already passed your law. We're waiting until our law is set, because if we ask for the audit now, they get to say, oh yeah, we're changing that next month. No, no. What is it now? And so we're working on auditing first. What are you being trained And then we're going to make sure that we can go back in and change that training. So it's kind of a three-part. If the audit doesn't work, did I mention I have the chair of the Public Safety Committee to go ahead and have some legislation and hearings? So it's kind of a three-part. I would encourage explaining it in depth so that anyone from another state can start this where you are.
So I just want to add one thing to that, just to point out what Dale's saying, is that every single agency that she mentioned has a set of regulations that they do their job by, standard operating procedures. The police department has a schedule of crimes they're supposed to be following, with the most important ones at the top. It's a list, right? And the least important ones at the bottom. CPS has a set of guidelines that they follow somewhere in their organization, the standard operating procedures. Those all need rewritten across every agency that has touched the plant, our children, and our lives. Those are going to be rewritten if we go in and make sure they're rewritten. And if we don't, those old laws and those old regulations might stay around on the standard operating procedures for way too long. So we're going to have to take some personal initiative and go get that stuff done.
Thank you. And audits are a good way to do it because they're non-threatening. Hey, we just want to make sure we're getting it right. You don't get sued. Yeah, it's cool. We're all on the same team here. So audits are a great way to go. Non-threatening.